which I did plan on doing once the group was together. Blake's house was on top of a hill, Tudor style with gray and white bricks. It was bigger than most of the others on the street, including Danielle's. The wooden double door entrance was huge, the arch overhead reminding me of a palace. He opened the door soon after we rang the bell.
"We're meeting in my room,"
he said, stepping aside to let us in.
"Chris and Danielle are already here."
I walked through the doors and gazed around in awe. The wooden floors and antique furniture made me feel like I'd stepped into an old movie. A golden chandelier hung overhead, so extravagant that it felt like it should have been in an opera house instead of a foyer. Blake led us down the hall and through the kitchen, which looked like something out of a luxury design magazine. But we didn't get to see much of the house, because he opened a door leading to the basement and motioned us to go ahead.
"Your bedroom's in the basement?" I asked, glancing down the steps.
"I moved down here at the start of freshman year because it's more private," he said simply. "The basement is like my own little house."
I reached the bottom of the stairs, looked around, and what he'd said immediately made sense. A large open space held a ping pong table, a foosball table, two pinball machines, and a small kitchen. We followed him further back into a white carpeted living room area. Chris and Danielle were already there, the two of them on opposite sides of a wraparound sofa that faced a huge television. Chris leaned back into the couch, his feet resting on the ottoman and his hands clasped behind his head. His gray t-shirt said Montgomery Biscuits in huge font, and the logo was cute, a smiling biscuit with a pat of butter for its tongue. Danielle was decked out in black leather pants and a silk strappy top. She looks ready for a party, not to hang out in a basement. "Finally, you're here," she said, studying her nails. "Blake told us about the thing that Darius showed you."
"You mean the prophecy?"
I pulled the folded piece of paper out of my back pocket and waved it in the air. She rolled her eyes.
"Yeah, that."
Blake sat down next to her, and she placed her hand in his, a smug smile crossing her face. He didn't lean into her, but he didn't back away either. He also refused to meet my eyes. "So," I said, sitting as far away from Blake and Danielle as possible, "what do you all know so far?" Chris jumped right in.
"Blake's got some crazy firepower. Danielle just told us that she can control water. Kate makes plants grow without meaning to. And you made that glass explode today. And some prophecy talks about the comet making a wall grow thin, five representing each part of the world, and a journey east. I wouldn't mind a trip to Europe, but it makes no sense."
"That's the gist of it," I said, placing the paper on the coffee table and flattening out the creases. Chris brought his hand up to his mouth and chewed his thumbnail.
"So you all have cool powers, and I have nothing," he said. "That kind of blows."
"Maybe you have power over the air," I suggested. He stared at me blankly, and I continued. "You could try testing it out."
"And how should I do that?"
The sarcasm in his tone surprised me.
"Since you're apparently the expert on all of this, even though you've only been here for a little over a week."
"Chill out."
Blake clenched his jaw and glared at Chris.
"We won't figure anything out if we attack each other."
My heart leapt at Blake's defense of me. But when I tried to catch his gaze, he avoided me again, and I quickly deflated. So I looked away from him and focused on Chris. "Let's see if you have an ability that you didn't have before," I suggested. "Try doing something with air control."
"Air control?"
He laughed and pushed his sleeves up to his elbows.
"What does that even mean?"
"Try harnessing the air to create wind and blow this paper off the table."
"Seriously?"
He widened his eyes, looking at me like I'd lost my mind.
"No one can do that, not even the elders."
"The elders also can't control fire, water, and plants, or make glasses explode," Kate said from her spot on the floor. "You should try it. It's no more far-fetched than what any of us can do."
"Nicole's the one who made the glass explode," he said. "Couldn't that mean she's air?"
"It could," I said. "But what I did was different. I'll explain soon."
First, it'll help if you try this. Please? He sat straighter and planted both feet on the floor.
All right, he said,
leaning forward and rubbing his hands together.
Here goes nothing.
He stared at the paper and narrowed his eyes. His forehead creased in concentration. For a few seconds, nothing happened. Was I wrong in thinking he could do this? But then a gust of wind blew the paper off the table and across the room. It whirled up to slap the ceiling and then fluttered to the floor next to the television.
I did it, Chris exclaimed,
pumping his fist in the air. The paper swirled up again and landed back onto the table.
That was awesome.
He fell back down on the couch and gave Kate a high five. She tucked her hair behind her ears and looked back down at the floor, a small smile on her face. Now, we know that you four each have control over a different element, I said, clasping my hands in my lap and looking at each of them. It could relate to where the prophecy says, five representing each part of the world.
Each element has a color it correlates to, Blake broke in. Nicole and I looked it up online after Darius showed her the prophecy. Earth is green, fire is red, water is blue, and air is yellow.
Danielle huffed and crossed her arms.
Now we're basing our ideas off of Google searches?
She rolled her eyes, her upper lip curled.
Great.
Do you have any better ideas? I asked.
Not ideas, but I do have a question, she said. If what you and Blake are saying is correct, then what does that make you?
This is there are five representing each part of the world, but there are only four elements.
There are actually five elements, and I think Nicole is the final one.
Blake spoke up again.
Ether. It also means spirit or power of life. The prophecy says the ether will ignite them, so them must be the four other elements, the elements we can control. Under the comet, we felt an electric shock. That could have been when our new powers manifested.
So the comet gave us powers, Chris said. And it was ignited by the ether, which is you.
He pointed at me, his eyes serious.
But have you been able to use the spirit of life, whatever that means?
I looked around at all of them and took a deep breath. It was now or never. You all saw what happened in homeroom this morning, when the glass broke, I asked. Everyone nodded, which I took as a sign to continue. Even Danielle crossed her legs and faced my direction, looking mildly interested in what I had to say. A shard of glass got into my arm, I said, glancing down at my wrist. I panicked and took it out, and when I was putting pressure on it to stop the bleeding, I imagined it healing. I held my hand over the same spot on my arm, remembering how easy it had been to fix. It worked. Danielle uncrossed her legs and placed her hands on her knees.
Let me get this straight, she said. You healed a gash on your arm in less than a minute?
I don't know how long it took.
It was about 10 seconds, Kate said.
Okay. I smiled at her in thanks and turned back to Danielle. 10 seconds. That could be what the spirit of life means, the power to heal. Danielle nodded and sat back in the couch. If I didn't know any better, I might have thought she was impressed. By me.
So we've gone over most of the prophecy, Blake said quickly. But we haven't talked about the last line, the one about the journey and the shadows. Do any of you have an idea about what it could mean?
No clue. I shrugged and looked around to see if anyone else had an idea. No one spoke up.
I'm as stumped as the rest of you,
Chris said after a few long seconds.
And I'm also hungry. Why don't we go to Sophie's and talk about it there? Maybe a change of scenery will help us think.
I looked at him and tilted my head. Who's Sophie? I asked.
Sophie's Diner,
he laughed.
Open 24 hours. Got the best food around.
My stomach growled with the thought. I haven't been there yet, I told him. And food does sound amazing right now.
Then we definitely have to go.
He stood up and headed towards the stairs before anyone could disagree.
and we piled into our cars to head to Sophie's Diner, which Chris swore had the best burgers in the state of Massachusetts.
Chapter 18. The delicious smell of greasy food filled my nose the second I walked inside Sophie's Diner, making my mouth water. The seafoam green booths looked welcoming, and the mini jukeboxes on the walls gave the place a fun 50s vibe. Even though I hadn't tried the food yet, I already loved it here.
"Table for five?" the hostess asked, grabbing menus from the stack on the stand.
"A booth would be great," Blake said smoothly.
We followed her to a booth in the corner, which wrapped around in a semicircle, and got ourselves situated. The menu had tons of options, but I ultimately went with a burger, since Chris said they were the best. The waitress brought out our drinks first. The hot chocolate smelled amazing, and I took a sip without bothering to test how hot it was. It scorched my tongue, and I gasped and chugged some water, hoping I hadn't temporarily destroyed my taste buds. Without asking if I minded, Danielle reached across the table and wrapped her hand around my steaming mug. I almost yanked it out of her grip, but stopped when I saw how intensely she was staring at it. Finally, she pulled her hand back and looked at me. "Try it now," she said simply. I hesitated. Hopefully she hadn't poisoned my drink with gray energy. However, doubting she would do that with everyone watching, I lifted the mug and took a sip, preparing to burn my tongue for a second time. The hot chocolate was the perfect temperature. "How did you do that?" I asked, placing it back down.
"My element is water," she said. "Obviously, there's water in hot chocolate, so I gathered blue energy and thought about the drink cooling off. I guess it worked."
"Cool."
Chris placed both palms on the table, his eyes lighting up.
"Can you boil my water?"
"Not unless you want me to melt the plastic."
Danielle laughed, looking at him like he was a few brain cells short.
"Although, I might be able to do this."
She reached forward and wrapped her hand around his cup, the same intense expression in her eyes that she'd had when cooling my hot chocolate. The ice cubes in Chris's water melted in seconds.
"Wow."
Chris's mouth dropped open.
"Impressive."
"But not exceptionally useful," she said, dropping her arm back to her side.
"I'm going to figure out some more things I can do with it later."
It was tempting to say something along the lines of, "besides making water fountains explode in people's faces," but I held back. There was no need to start an unnecessary argument now.
"Good plan," I said instead, taking another sip of hot chocolate.
"So, why are Journey and Shadows capitalized in the prophecy?"
Chris asked after we got our food.
"I've been thinking about that," Kate said. "In standard English, only proper nouns are capitalized, so the capitalized words could represent names or locations."
"Thanks for the grammar lesson," Danielle said,
grabbing a packet of fake sugar and dumping it into her coffee. I ignored her and refocused on the prophecy. "So we have to go on a journey down a path to the shadows." I paused to take a bite of my burger and to think. What did that mean? It still didn't make any sense. We sat in silence, eating our food and trying to come up with ideas. Everyone else seemed to be drawing a blank too.
"Sophie,"
Chris yelled, waving his arms in the air and zapping me out of my thoughts.
"Hey."
A large woman with a huge toothy smile walked towards us. She looked about my grandmother's age, with wrinkly skin and a few brown spots on her face. Her gray hair was pulled into a tight bun at the nape of her neck, and she wore a long blue dress that made her look like she'd stepped right out of an old village.
"Chris,"
she greeted him.
"It's good to see you again. It's been 2 days?
"I can't resist the burgers," he said with a laugh. "Plus, Nicole just moved here, and we all know that eating at Sophie's is a must in Kinsley."
"Nicole?"
Sophie looked at me and smiled.
"Victory of the people."
"What?" I scrunched my eyebrows and tilted my head.
"The origin of your name is Greek," she said. "It means victory of the people."
It was a strange thing to say, but I nodded, assuming she was just a quirky older lady. "Are you from Greece?" I asked.
"I was born there, yes." I moved here with my family about 30 years ago, and we opened the diner together. Been running it ever since.
I've never known the town without Sophie's.
Chris shook some hair out of his eyes and turned back to her.
Hey, maybe you can help us out with something. It's homework for our Greek mythology class.
I took a sharp breath inward, ready to stop him from showing her the prophecy. But maybe it wouldn't be bad to get an outsider's perspective. Sophie was from Greece, and we were descended from the Greek gods. She might be able to help.
I can try,
Sophie said,
but not for long. I do have other customers to tend to.
She winked, and even though the diner was packed, it looked like there was enough staff to handle it. Chris passed the paper to her.
We're trying to figure out what this means,
he said.
We think we have the beginning figured out, but the last sentence has us stumped. Do you have any idea why journey and shadows would be capitalized?
Her eyes turned serious as she read it over.
I have no idea what most of this means.
She mused, holding a chubby finger to her chin.
But journey translates to Odyssey in Greek. Like the book. The name Odessa, like Odessa Road, stems from that word.
The main street in town, I said. The piece is starting to fall into place.
It's just an idea.
She shrugged and handed the prophecy back to Chris.
But I've got to get back to work. Good luck on the homework.
She turned and headed to another table, not giving us a chance to ask any more questions. I grabbed the ketchup and squirted a large amount onto my plate. If Sophie's right, then we need to go east on Odessa Road, I said, dipping a fry into the ketchup and eating it. It sounds like a long shot, but it's all we've got.
You really think an ancient prophecy is talking about a street in Kinsley?
Danielle sneered.
That makes no sense.
The prophecy was written 300 years ago, which doesn't make it ancient,
Blake pointed out.
Kinsley's been around for longer than that, and Odessa's one of the oldest roads in town, so it's possible.
Danielle huffed, stabbed a piece of lettuce with her fork, and popped it in her mouth. Blake imitated her by doing the same thing with his ravioli, but 10 times more exaggerated. She glared at him and continued eating, although she stopped stabbing her food. They were so familiar with each other. Who was I to think that Blake might be interested in me? Someone he'd only known for a week. He was interested in my abilities, not in me. The sooner I accepted that, the sooner I could focus on the things that mattered, like the prophecy and learning how to use my new powers. So we have an idea about what journey could mean, I said, picking up the paper and skimming it again. But what about shadows?
It sounds foreboding.
Chris laughed and finished his last fry. It does, I agreed. Maybe we should just go east and see what happens. Danielle rolled her eyes.
What a solid plan.
I dropped the prophecy on the table and sat back in the booth. Do you have any better ideas? I asked. She scowled and concentrated on eating her salad, which I guessed was a no.
Should we get started on this journey now?
Blake broke the silence. I looked out the window, the sight of the night sky sending a sinking feeling through my stomach. Without the sun shining overhead, I felt unprotected. It's late, I said, glancing at my watch. 10:30 p.m. I have a midnight curfew, so we should wait until tomorrow and go during the day. We'll have more time, and we'll be able to see better.
Are you afraid of the dark?
Chris raised his hands into makeshift claws, wiggling his fingers in my face.
The scary creatures of the night are going to get you.
I'm not afraid of the dark. I swatted his hand away, laughing. It just seems like a better plan. We should listen to Nicole, Kate said, so serious that we stopped laughing. She's had good instincts so far.
I say we go now,
Danielle argued. I can't imagine that a drive down Odessa Road will take longer than an hour. If it does, we'll stop so we can get home in time and resume tomorrow. It'll be more efficient. Maybe. I looked out the window again and shivered. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I feel stronger during the day. Do any of you feel that way too? A few seconds passed in silence.
Not really,
Blake finally said.
But I'll trust you on that.
We should vote, Kate suggested. Who wants to go tomorrow?
She put her hand up, followed by Chris's, mine, and eventually Blake's. The unsettled feeling in my body calmed down. The majority of the group trusted my instincts, and I couldn't help but smile at how Blake had taken my side over Danielle's.
4-1, Chris said triumphantly. We go tomorrow morning. Let's meet back here at 10. The sun will be high in the sky, and we'll need some breakfast before our perilous journey.
Perilous journey? I repeated, arching an eyebrow. He shrugged.
It sounds more adventurous.
While I agreed with him, I hoped the journey wasn't as dangerous as he'd made it sound. Or at least, not so dangerous that someone would end up getting hurt.
Chapter 19. Falling asleep that night was impossible. My mind buzzed with everything that had happened since my first day at Kinsley High. Learning I'm a witch, seeing the comet, reading the prophecy, and knowing that tomorrow I would embark on a journey that may, or may not, be dangerous. I was staring at the ceiling with a million thoughts running through my mind when my cell phone dinged with a text.
Are you up?
It was from Blake. I read it a few more times, my fingers hovering over the keys. What should I text back? Should I text back at all? I'd already resigned myself to the fact that nothing was going to happen between us. Replying now, so late at night, would just blur those lines and give me hope. Hope that I shouldn't want to have. It would be easiest to ignore the text until tomorrow and pretend like I'd been sleeping when he'd sent it. That way, no one would get hurt. But if I didn't reply, I would toss and turn all night, unable to fall asleep because I would be so curious about what he wanted to say. So I had to text him back. It would drive me too crazy if I didn't. Yeah, I typed. I'm trying to sleep, but it's not working well. I sent it, and his response came in seconds.
Want to hang out? I can come pick you up.
My heart jumped into my throat. Because yes, of course I wanted to hang out with Blake. I wanted to see him, just the two of us, alone, more than anything. I wanted to know if whatever I was feeling for him was just in my head, or if he felt it too. Because if he was reaching out to me like this, it had to mean he was interested, right? Unfortunately, it wasn't that simple, no matter how much I wished it could be. What about your girlfriend? I asked. I watched the text bubble move as he typed, so nervous that I could barely breathe.
Things with Danielle are complicated. It's too much to explain over text.
Hope rose in my chest, and despite knowing that complicated didn't mean that they were broken up, now I definitely wanted to see him. I needed to know the full story. Of course, to see him, I would have to sneak out, which I'd never done before. But my parents were sound sleepers and had been in bed for hours. They would never know I'd left. And if they did catch me, I could always put blue energy into their morning coffee so they would be calm and relaxed about it tomorrow. Sure, I typed quickly so I couldn't overthink what I was doing. I didn't want time to talk myself out of this. I'm on 404 Cypress Street. I kept my phone in my hand while I waited for him to reply, staring anxiously at the screen.
Be there in 10.
I dropped the phone on my bed and got up to change out of my pajamas. As I decided on an outfit, I couldn't help second-guessing my decision to see him. He had a girlfriend, and despite things being complicated between them, I would bet that Danielle would be pretty angry if she found out that Blake had texted me to hang out tonight. At the same time, I wanted to learn about whatever this complication was. Seeing him tonight didn't mean that anything was going to happen between us. Of course, this was under the assumption that he was interested in me at all. Maybe he really couldn't sleep and wanted a friend to spend time with, and I was the only one awake. Or worse, maybe he wanted to ask me for advice on his relationship with Danielle. Not wanting to overanalyze the situation, I returned my attention to getting ready. As I dabbed on concealer, I noticed that the dark circles under my eyes were terrible. In addition to the lack of sleep, the stress of everything I'd found out recently must have been getting to me more than I'd realized. Once ready, I paced around my room, waiting for Blake to text me that he was here.
Finally, my phone buzzed.
I'm in front of your house, I think. Blue with the gabled windows?
I peeked through the blinds. A black Range Rover was parked on the street, with Blake in the driver's seat. I see you, I wrote back. I'll be out in a minute. I walked out of my room and into the hall. My parents' room was on the first floor, so the second floor of the house was small. Only the bathroom and the steps separated my room from my sister's. Light shined from underneath her door, and I heard the tapping of computer keys as she talked with her friends online. I hadn't expected her to still be awake. This would make things trickier. My door creaked loudly as it closed. Stupid old houses. I only made it one more step before Becca's door opened. She crossed her arms and leaned against the wall, a smug smile on her face.
Where are you off to right now?
She asked, glancing up and down at my outfit. Nowhere. My voice shook, and I placed a hand on top of the railing.
Come on.
She brought her dark, curly hair in front of her shoulders and combed her fingers through it.
You're totally sneaking out.
No, I'm not, I said, although I sounded far from convincing. I was just going downstairs to get a snack.
And that required you to get dressed and put on makeup?
She smirked and raised an eyebrow. Just because I'm younger than you doesn't mean I'm stupid. I know that, I said. I never said you were.
Then stop lying to me.
She pouted and leaned against the doorframe.
Because all I'm wondering is, who are you going to see?
Relief flooded my chest at how she sounded amused by the situation, and not like she wanted to stop me. A friend from school, I said quickly, hoping I wasn't taking so long that Blake thought I was standing him up. Don't tell Mom and Dad, okay?
Fine. She rolled her eyes. But you owe me.
She stomped to the bathroom and shut the door, closing it with more force than necessary. I made it downstairs and out of the house without any more trouble. The front door shut quietly, and I took a deep breath walking towards Blake's Range Rover. I couldn't believe he was here, and that I was actually doing this. Trying to will my hands to stop shaking, I opened the door and slid into the passenger seat, smiling in a way that I hoped looked casual. Hi, I said softly, keeping my eyes locked on his as I clicked my seatbelt into place. His hair was a bit messy, and he also had circles under his eyes. But he managed to pull it off so he looked more like a rock star than a sleep-deprived teen.
Hey.
His voice was smooth, and he smiled in a way that made me believe he was truly happy I'd come out.
You look good for not being able to sleep.
Thanks. So do you. My cheeks heated, and I glanced down at my hands. I wanted more than anything to ask him about Danielle, but I didn't want to push it too quickly. Where are we going? I asked instead.
There's an old playground at the Hemlock Center.
He put the car into drive and headed down my street.
We could go there and hang out.
What's the Hemlock Center? I asked.
It used to be a house, but the state bought the property and changed it into a school in the early 1900s. It was a school for people with behavior problems, you could say.
Like an institution?
Exactly.
He nodded, his gaze fixed on the road.
But it closed a few years ago because of problems with safety codes. Now it's just a bunch of abandoned buildings.
I eyed him cautiously. And you go there to hang out a lot?
I used to, with friends,
he said.
Usually it's used by freshmen who want a private place to drink. It's late enough now that it should be quiet.
I nodded and looked out the window. There were practically no cars on the road at this time of night. Most people were asleep, like I should have been. Then again, most people weren't worried about fulfilling a possibly dangerous prophecy tomorrow. Blake turned onto a dark, winding road, and I spotted a three-story stone building with large white columns. The roof had a sharp slant, like the haunted mansions in theme parks, with gabled windows on the third floor. A bare tree curved around the side, its looming branches standing guard against unwanted visitors. He parked the car near a sprawling wooden playground, and I brightened when I saw it. Now I understood why he wanted to come here. The playground must have had 10 small platforms on all different levels, some bigger than others. The highest ones had roofs in the shape of fairy tale towers. Narrow steps and bridges connected each platform to the next, Each platform had different ways of getting onto them. Logs, ladders, tires, steps. And the one on the furthest end led out to a set of wooden monkey bars. It reminded me of the Robinson treehouse. Nearby was an old merry-go-round, metal with bars to hold onto, and a thick pole in the center. It looked like it had been built in a different decade than the rest of the playground. I walked to the merry-go-round, skimming my hand along the rail. Blake followed close behind. I haven't been on one of these since fourth grade, I said, smiling at the memory. I fell off the side from trying to make it spin too fast.
I can picture that,
he laughed.
This time, how about I spin it and you stay in the center so you don't fall off?
I tilted my head, like I was unsure, even though there wasn't a chance I would say no. Okay, I finally said. But if I do fall, it's your fault for talking me into it. I climbed onto it and smiled at him, tossing my hair over my shoulders and situating myself in the center.
I won't let you fall.
He grabbed the outside rail and started to run before I could say anything more. The playground and the surrounding buildings blurred around me, and it was like I was back in elementary school, enjoying recess with my friends. My hair flew in all directions, and even though the wind rushed past my face, the cold didn't bother me. I laughed and looked up at the stars spinning overhead, shining in the cloudless night. They looked like sparkling diamonds. Blake jumped on to join me, sitting so close that his arm brushed against mine. Even though we were both wearing jackets, my skin tingled at the proximity to his. We admired the stars in silence, and the merry-go-round spun slower and slower, creaking a few times before going still. For a moment, I forgot about the prophecy and what we're doing tomorrow, I said, running my hands through my hair in an attempt to untangle it. It all seems so surreal. His eyes filled with intensity, and he leaned closer, leaving barely any space between us.
Everything's been that way since you moved to town, he said. Surreal.
My breath caught, and I was trapped in his gaze. What do you mean by that? I asked.
Nothing's been normal since you got here, he said. After all, if you weren't here, I might not be able to do this.
He took out his lighter and flicked it on, shooting a fireball into an arc above our heads. It looked like a meteor, dying out before reaching the ground. Then he shot up four more. The sparks of light reminded me of a fountain show, but with fire instead of water. I watched until they went out, amazed that all of this was real. My world had gone from normal to magical in only a few days. Everything I'd once believed to be true had been turned upside down, and even though it was crazy and possibly dangerous, I loved every second of it. I just don't understand why my powers are different than everyone else's. I confessed what had been keeping me up all night. You and the others can control the elements. That seems more useful than what I can do.
Maybe it's because spirit is so different from the physical elements, he said. But I think your power could be the most useful of them all. I actually wanted to try something with it.
He pulled out a pocket knife, and before I could ask him what he was doing, he pushed back the sleeve of his jacket, lowered the blade to his arm, and made a small incision. A thin line of blood emerged from the cut, bright red against his skin. Why did you do that? I asked, looking from the cut to his face and back again.
So you can practice using your power, he said. I would never ask you to do that to yourself, so I had to do it to me.
He held his arm out and watched me expectantly.
Now, are you going to heal this or what?
Of course I'll try. I rested my hand over the cut, his blood sticky against my palm. But I've only done this once, and I had no idea what I was doing. I'm sorry if it doesn't work again.
It'll work, he said. I believe in you.
I wished I believed in myself half as much as he apparently believed in me. But since I didn't want to leave him bleeding for any longer than necessary, I closed my eyes and tried to recreate whatever I'd done when I healed my own arm in class. I pictured white energy flowing through my body, feeling the warm tingle as it rushed through my arm and came out of my palm. Once the energy died out, I opened my eyes and lifted my hand. The cut was still there. I watched,
defeated, as a drop of his blood leaked out and dripped onto the floor of the merry-go-round. Apparently, I wasn't as powerful as Blake thought I was. He'd had so much faith in me that he'd injured himself, and I couldn't even heal him. I was a failure.
Try to imagine what the cut feels like.
He leaned closer, his forehead nearly touching mine, and my heart pounded faster.
Think about when you healed yourself. You did it before, so you can do it now. I know it.
Okay. I closed my eyes and imagined the cut on my arm instead of on his, transferring whatever pain he was feeling onto myself. Calling forth the white energy again, I allowed it to flow out of my palm where my hand rested on his arm, picturing the skin knitting together and returning to normal. At the same time, I felt the same thing happening to me, until the pain I'd created in my mind disappeared and the last bit of white energy flowed out of my body. Then I opened my eyes to see if it worked. His skin was smooth, as though the cut had never existed in the first place.
Perfect.
He nodded and pulled his sleeve back down.
Now, if any of us get injured, we know you can fix it.
I don't know how much I can do, I said, leaning back against the pole to stop my head from spinning. It wears me out pretty fast.
It'll get easier with practice,
he assured me.
The same way that athletes get stronger the more they work out.
It works the same way for us?
It's why the elders are so powerful,
he said.
But I have a feeling that it'll come naturally to you. There's something different about your powers, something I've never seen before. You shouldn't have been able to capture energy on your first day. And now, a week later, you have that mastered, and you're healing people. It's incredible.
There's something different about all of our powers, I reminded him. Me, you, Kate, Chris, and Danielle.
True,
he said.
So I guess none of us know what to expect now.
We stared at the stars again, the mention of Danielle's name hanging in the air. I couldn't put off asking about her any longer. What did you mean in your text? I asked, needing to get the question off my chest. When you said that things were complicated between you and Danielle.
I'm surprised it took you so long to ask,
he said, and I leaned forward, waiting for him to continue.
Things between me and Danielle haven't been great recently. I don't know how much you know, so I'm just going to put it out there. There's a group of us that get together privately to practice using gray energy. It's not illegal, but we're not taught it in school, so we wanted to train ourselves to use it. We never thought we would need it, but teaching ourselves something we're not allowed to learn in school was fun. Then last semester, Danielle started using it on humans. At first, it was small things, like putting gray energy into the pens of people she didn't like right before they took a test, so they would mess up.
And putting gray energy into my tennis racket? I asked.
Exactly,
he said.
But then, in November, she put gray energy into a girl's drink just because she was talking to me at a party.
Were you interested in that girl? I didn't want to accuse him of anything, but I was curious if Danielle had an actual reason to be jealous. It wouldn't make what she did okay, but I still wanted to know.
No,
he said immediately.
Not at all. We had woodworking together, and we were talking about our latest project for class. She was shy and seemed uncomfortable at the party, so I didn't want to leave her by herself. Then Danielle saw us, jumped to conclusions, and put gray energy into her drink right before she drove home.
He paused and looked out at the trees, his eyes pained at the memory. Kate told me about what happened to her. I reached for him and rested my hand on his arm, glad when he didn't move away. I hope you know it's not your fault.
It's Danielle's fault, he said,
snapping back into focus.
And I haven't been able to look at her the same since.
But you're still with her, I said. Why?
I ended things with her right after it happened, he said. She'd changed too much from the person she was when we'd first started dating, and I didn't like who she'd become. But she came crying to me a week later, promising she wouldn't use gray energy anymore, and begged me to give her another chance. So I did. But after what she pulled on you during your tennis tryout the other day, I'm done. She loves using gray energy too much to give it up. And I hate thinking that anyone I talk to is at risk of getting hurt by her. I was planning on telling her tonight, but then everything happened with the prophecy, and I couldn't risk it. Because whatever we have to do tomorrow is important, and I have no idea what she'll do when I tell her it's over. Wow. I let out a long breath, and realizing how long my hand had been resting on his arm, I pulled it back onto my lap. I had no idea, but thank you for telling me, for trusting me. It means a lot. And it means a lot to me that you gave me a chance tonight and heard me out, he said. Danielle's so jealous of you. I'm worried that after I end it with her, she'll blame you, and I don't want her to do anything that might hurt you.
I have you, Kate, and Chris on my side, I said. The three of you will protect me, and I have ways to protect myself now, too.
True, he smiled. You do.
But Danielle's so confident and strong, I said. Why would she be jealous of me?
Let's see.
He leaned back and looked up at the stars, as if he had as many reasons as the lights twinkling up above.
You're more powerful than her. You're better at tennis. Your element, the ether, is the center of all of ours. You're the one who Darius entrusted with the prophecy, and using your powers is so natural to you that it seems like you have more potential than any of us. It's impressive.
He smiled at me, and my stomach did that whole flipping thing again. Hopefully the cold air disguised the redness creeping onto my cheeks. Thanks, I said softly, glancing down at my hands.
I mean it,
he said, scooting closer to me. I shivered, unsure if it was because of the wind or the fact that Blake's hand brushed softly against mine.
Still not used to the cold?
He asked. I don't think I'll ever get used to it, I said. Especially at night. Not that the night isn't pretty, but it's warmer during the day. I love being in the sun.
So let's create our own sun.
He flicked on the lighter and grabbed the flame, floating it above his palm. It grew into a yellow sphere the size of a snow globe, and the heat warmed my face, stopping my shivering. The fire had taken on a life of its own. He put the fire back in his pocket and held his other hand underneath the fire as well, balancing the orb of light in his palms. It grew to the size of a basketball and floated up until it was right above our heads. He'd created our own personal sun. Wow. I stared up at it in amazement. That's incredible.
Thanks, he said. I've been practicing.
He was watching me so intensely, and I wondered if he was about to kiss me. My heart fluttered at the thought. I'd never been kissed before. That one time during Truth or Dare at tennis camp last summer didn't count. And I didn't know what to expect. All I knew was that I wanted this. I wanted him. But just when he started moving closer, a twig snapped behind us, and I glanced over my shoulder to see what it was. Is someone there? I whispered, panic flooding my veins. Were we even allowed to be here right now? What if the cops found us and were going to get us in trouble? Hopefully they wouldn't call my parents. I would definitely be grounded if my parents found out that I'd snuck out and gotten caught for breaking and entering. Well, we hadn't broken anything, but we did enter.
It's probably an animal.
Blake looked back up at the fire and made it burn brighter.
They're everywhere around here.
Just as he said it, something growled and stepped out of the shadows. At first, I thought it was a wolf, but whatever this creature was, it definitely wasn't something I'd heard of before. It looked like a science experiment gone horribly wrong. Its neck was split into two, each one sprouting a separate head. Its tail stood on end, a scaly thing that looked like it belonged on a scorpion, the spiky tip pointing straight into the air. I grabbed Blake's arm and looked at him to check if he was seeing this too. Judging by the horror splashed across his face, he was. Growling again, the creature dug its front claws into the dirt and lowered its heads to the ground, its glowing yellow eyes locked on ours. Then it chomped its teeth together, let out a feral growl, and charged. Chapter 20.
Run!
Blake yelled, grabbing my arm and pulling me off the merry-go-round. It spun under our weight, and I held onto the metal bars, pushing off of them to leap over the edge. The cedar chips on the ground cushioned my landing. The car was behind us, which would mean running towards the monstrous hound. So I bolted for the playground, hurrying up a ladder of rubber tires that led to the closest platform. Blake followed close behind. The second he was up, he took the lighter out of his pocket and aimed a blue fireball at the tires, melting them to the ground seconds before the hound reached them. It looked up at us and growled. A low, menacing sound that if I spoke dog, I would have assumed meant, "I'm going to have you for dinner," and tried to jump onto the platform. It missed by only a few inches. Blake flicked on his lighter and threw a fireball at the hound's chest, but it jumped to the side to get out of the way. It turned all four of its eyes up at us, one head letting out a deep roar as the other snapped its teeth together, taking bites out of the air. My hands shook, and I gripped one of the log posts behind me for support. "Have you learned how to fight these things in homeroom?" I asked Blake, my voice rising in panic. He threw another fireball, and it missed the hound again. "No," he snapped, the flames lighting up his face. "Fighting legendary creatures isn't on the syllabus."
"Maybe it should be," I said as he launched another ball of fire, hitting the hound on its front paw. Both of its heads yelped in pain.
The scorpion tail lowered between its legs, and it growled again before turning away from us and running around the side of the playground, wood chips flying behind it as it gained speed. My heart pounded, and I looked around to figure out how to get off the platform. The exit was a slide that dropped off at the monkey bars. I could get down and run to the car, but I didn't know where the hound was, and leaving the platform could give it the perfect opportunity to pounce. Then the hound growled again. I turned around, spotting it clambering up a ladder of logs that led to a nearby platform. Only a wobbly bridge separated that platform from our own. My entire body shook, and I moved closer to Blake, grabbing his arm for support. The hound reached the top of the platform, and its glowing eyes narrowed, ready to attack. Not having anywhere else to go, I launched myself down the slide and hurried to the monkey bars, climbing up the ladder and hoisting myself on top of them. Gripping the sides, I crawled to the center bar, but the ground spun beneath me, my lungs tightening as I looked down. I had to take a few deep breaths to steady myself. A 6-foot fall wasn't deadly. Now wasn't the time to let my fear of heights get to me. Blake scrambled behind me, and I turned around to make sure he wasn't hurt. Sweat dripped down the sides of his face from the flames, but other than that, he looked okay. He took his lighter out again, holding it up in preparation to create another fireball. I looked back at the hound in time to see it run along the bridge and hurl itself towards us. It bared its teeth as it flew through the air, its arms outstretched as it came closer to the monkey bars. But it must not have had enough force behind the jump, because it fell to the ground with a loud thud. It stood and shook the wood chips off its fur, a low growl coming from somewhere deep in its throat as it turned its heads up to look at us. Before I could say anything to Blake about how completely screwed we were, he threw two balls of fire towards the hound, hitting both of its faces. It howled and collapsed, whimpering as it buried its snouts in its paws. The smell of burnt skin filled the air. My stomach swirled with nausea, and I lifted a hand to my nose to block out the odor. Only a few seconds passed before it stood up again. The fur on its face had changed into a charred gray. Its yellow eyes glowed brighter now, both snouts chomping madly in the air, strings of saliva dripping to the ground as it waited to devour whichever one of us lost our balance first. Then, I had a crazy idea. "Can you burn the wood around one of these metal bars and get it out?" I pointed to show Blake what I meant. The poles to grab onto while swinging across the monkey bars were metal, but the rest of the structure was wood. If Blake could burn a small amount of wood away that surrounded one of the poles, the metal could come loose.
"Without the whole structure falling down?"
He looked at me like I'd lost my mind.
"If I can, what do you plan on doing with it? Use it as a sword?"
"Sort of," I said. "Unless you have a better idea, because what we're doing now isn't working." He examined a metal bar on the end, running his hands along the edges where it met with the wood. I should be able to do it, he said, glancing down at the hound.
It jumped in the air and snapped its teeth, only missing us by a foot.
But if the structure falls, run for it.
He took his keys out of his pocket and placed them in my palm, wrapping my fist around them.
I'll distract it, and you get to the car. Don't wait for me.
You want me to leave you to deal with that thing alone? Now I looked at him like he was crazy. No way.
I can hold it off with my power,
he insisted.
I'll be fine.
The hound walked away before I could respond, not looking back as it disappeared behind the playground.
Is it leaving? I whispered.
Blake shook his head, his hand ready with his lighter.
I don't think so.
It reappeared in my line of sight, and I realized what it was doing. A few platforms away was another way up the jungle gym, a single log that looked like a large balance beam slanted upwards, and it was heading right towards it. Blake must have realized what it was doing too, because he threw another ball of fire towards the hound. The flames hit the tip of its scorpion tail. The fire took only a few seconds to go out, and the hound jumped onto the platform we were on earlier, glaring at us. It backed up to the other end of the bridge and dug its legs into the wood like a bull about to attack. I tightened my grip on the edges of the monkey bars. Get me the metal bar, I said, my voice surprisingly steady, considering that my heart was beating so fast that it felt like it was about to burst out of my chest. Now. He flicked on the lighter, directing the fire towards the wood around the farthest pole. I held on to the sides for support in case it collapsed, keeping watch on the hound. It must have known what we were doing, because it raced across the bridge, gaining speed in preparation to jump. Blake yanked the bar out of the wood and handed it to me. My hand wrapped around the metal, and it was like time slowed down. The hound leaped off the platform and soared through the air, all four of its eyes on me. I zeroed in on my target, the spot on its chest where its heart should be, and my mind knew what to do. It was like looking through a high-tech sniper rifle. I could see exactly where to aim, and knew how much force I needed to use and what angle to point the pole to hit the moving target. It felt similar to when I evaluated how to hit a ball in tennis towards a specific spot on the court. Only a million times more accurate, like the adrenaline coursing through my veins had set my mind on super speed. I pulled my arm back and sent the pole flying, directing it on a straight, smooth path exactly where I'd intended. It connected with the target, and two high-pitched yelps sounded through the air, followed by a bang as the hound collided with the ground. Everything was silent for the first time since the hound had appeared. I leaned over the edge of the monkey bars to check on it, grimacing at what I saw. The pole had gotten stuck in its body, entering its chest and coming out through its back. Blood glistened on the metal. One of its heads twisted at an unnatural angle, and the other whimpered before closing its eyes and falling lifeless on the ground. Its tail twitched a few times and went still. I almost felt bad for the thing. But then I remembered how it had tried to make Blake and me into a late-night snack, and I didn't feel quite as guilty. Now was the issue of what to do with the body. Before I could ask Blake for any ideas, the hound flickered like a faulty projected image and disappeared. All that remained was the pole, half covered in blood. I looked around, checking if there were any other monsters lurking in the darkness. Piles of wood chips crackled with flames, but other than that, nothing seemed to be moving. I think we can get down now, I said. Blake headed towards the ladder, but when he shifted his weight, the monkey bars collapsed, dumping us onto the ground. My breath caught at the impact. I broke the fall with my elbows and knees, rolling over the wood chips and colliding with Blake. He sat up and ran a hand through his hair, which had gotten messed up in the fall.
I guess the wood didn't take well to the fire,
he chuckled, and we both looked around the playground to examine the damage. The monkey bars dangled from one end like someone had taken a chainsaw to the middle of them. The flames on the wood chips were growing taller, and they lit up portions of the jungle gym, threatening to burn it all down. He held his hands up in the air and slowly lowered them. As he did, the fire receded until it was snuffed out completely. I examined my palms, which were cut up from the wood chips,
At least falling off the monkey bars is better than... I looked at the place where the hound had been, scrunching my nose at the bloody pole lying on the ground.
Than being ripped to shreds by a two-headed scorpion-tailed dog monster?
Blake finished my thought.
I definitely agree with you there.
Chapter 21. My injuries weren't bad, only a few scratches, and I called on white energy to heal them. They disappeared in seconds. Blake had a few cuts too, so I healed him as well, but using the energy wore me out. My head felt like a lead weight, and I could barely keep my eyes open.
You look tired,
Blake said as we walked to the car.
Let's go back and get some sleep so we're ready for whatever we'll be up against tomorrow. We'll tell the others about what happened in the morning.
I nodded, glad when we reached the car so I could sit down. My mind felt hazy, and all I wanted was to close my eyes, lean against the window, and go to sleep. Then I remembered something I wanted to ask him. I'd been hesitant to bring it up before, because I didn't want to be intrusive. But one question couldn't hurt. Plus, we'd just had a bonding experience. It's not every day that you have to work together to fight off a mythological monster that wants to kill you. I heard that you and your friends don't like humans very much, I began, watching him in the hope that the question wasn't too personal. Is that true? He stayed focused on the road, his jaw muscles tight.
It's not that we don't like them, he said simply, but we are more powerful than humans. Is it so bad to see them as weak?
It's not their fault that they don't have powers, I said. We're not any more deserving than they are. We didn't do anything special to be like this. It's just the way we were born.
It's different when you've grown up knowing about what you can do,
he said.
Humans are weak. We're powerful. Think of it like natural selection.
I looked out the window, not wanting to hear any more, because it just reminded me that Blake only liked me because of my powers. He wouldn't have noticed me at all if I were normal. He pulled up in front of my house and turned to look at me.
Nicole, he said,
the smoothness of his voice making my name sound like music.
I don't want you to take what I said about humans the wrong way. I'm not a bad person. I promise.
My thoughts drifted to the clay son he'd made for me in ceramics, and the time we'd spent together on the merry-go-round before getting attacked by the two-headed hound. You just saved my life at the playground, I said. No one's ever done anything like that for me before. I could never think you were a bad person.
Good.
He reached forward and brushed his fingers against my hand, sending a surge of heat up my arm.
I wouldn't be able to sleep tonight if you thought otherwise. All I could think about when we were fighting that thing was that I wouldn't be able to stand it if you got hurt because I couldn't protect you.
His hand remained on top of mine, and I looked up into his eyes, so soft and deep and caring. Being with Blake felt right. But an image of Danielle popped into my mind, and I yanked my hand out of his. He might be planning on breaking up with her, but right now, they were still together. And despite almost letting him kiss me on the playground, I didn't want to be an accessory to cheating. I should go, I said, the words getting stuck in my throat.
Right,
he nodded.
Good night, Nicole. Sleep well.
I said bye, got out of the car, and walked to my house. He didn't drive away until I stepped inside. Once in my room, I collapsed onto my bed, so exhausted that it only took seconds to fall asleep. Chapter 22. My cell phone rang, jolting me awake. Kate's name flashed on the caller ID. Wiping sleep out of my eyes, I pushed the answer button and lifted the phone to my ear.
I'm outside your house,
she told me before I could say hi. I rolled over and stared at the ceiling.
Already?
I mumbled, trying not to sound as tired as I felt.
Did I wake you up?
She gasped.
We're supposed to be at the diner in 15 minutes.
I can get ready fast, I said. I'll be there in a few. She said bye, and I managed to pull myself out of bed and trudge over to my closet.
What was right for a day of journeying towards the shadows, whatever that meant, and possibly fighting more monsters like the one from last night? It would probably be best to go with something comfortable, so I threw on jeans, a long-sleeved t-shirt, a sweatshirt, and sneakers. The pink Nike swoosh reminded me of what Darius had told us in homeroom a few days ago about how the symbol is based on the Greek goddess of victory. It wasn't exactly battle armor, but it would have to do. I walked downstairs and found my mom busy in the kitchen, cleaning up from dinner last night. She started the dishwasher and turned to me.
You slept late today, she said, pushing her hair out of her face. Is everything all right?
I had trouble falling asleep, I told her. But I'm heading out to have brunch with some friends. Kate's here to pick me up. They're giving me a tour of town afterwards, so I'll be out for a bit. It wasn't exactly a lie.
You've mentioned Kate before, she said, taking a glass out of the cabinet and filling it with water. But who else are you going with?
Three other kids in my homeroom. I glanced at my watch to see how much time had passed. 5 minutes. Hopefully Kate wouldn't be too mad. Chris, Blake, and Danielle?
Two guys,
she said, waggling her eyebrows.
Are either of them cute?
Mom? I whined, not in the mood to deal with this right now.
Never mind, she said with a smile. I'm just glad you're making friends so quickly. Call me when you know what time you'll be getting home.
We should do something as a family tonight. Maybe go out to dinner. Okay, I said, even though there was a chance that I might not be home in time for dinner. My phone dinged, a text from Kate telling me to get outside, and I grabbed my coat and headed out the door. Chapter 23.
Took you long enough,
Kate said as I got into the car. Sorry, I apologized again. I had to get ready and let my mom know where I was going.
It's okay, she said. I just hate being late.
She turned up the radio and sped down my street. She was focused on driving, so I looked out the window as we made our way through town. It didn't take long to arrive at the diner. It looked different in the day. The neon sign wasn't lit, so the building looked more washed up. But it was just as busy inside. Waiters scurried around to get customers their food, although because it was morning, most people had fluffy pancakes or Belgian waffles instead of hamburgers. It smelled delicious. Chris waved at us from the same table we had yesterday.
You made it,
he said, scooting over to make room. Kate rushed to sit next to Chris, which left me across from Blake. He was studying the menu as if he hadn't been there a million times before, refusing to make eye contact with me. I curled my fists under the table, trying to push away how much it hurt that he was blatantly ignoring me again. Kate ran her hands through her hair and looked at Chris.
Nicole had trouble waking up, she laughed. But it's okay. I dragged her out of bed.
I couldn't fall asleep last night. I opened my straw and put it in my water. Anything to avoid accidentally meeting Blake's eyes. The waitress took our orders, and I got the full eggs, pancakes, and bacon meal. The fact that I had such a huge appetite surprised me. I should have been nervous about whatever was going to happen on our journey, but my stomach felt hollow, like I hadn't eaten in days. Maybe it was because of all the energy I'd expended recently. After the waitress left, Chris slid into a casual conversation about school and sports. Kate smiled and nodded, clearly trying to appear not as worried as she was about all of the prophecy stuff. Danielle sent a few hate glares in my direction, and Blake still wouldn't look at me. At least Chris had a talent for holding up a conversation on his own, especially when it involved talking about how he planned on using his power over air to increase his accuracy at shooting three-pointers. I waited for Blake to bring up the incident from last night, but the food arrived before he had a chance. I contemplated bringing it up myself, but I couldn't do that, because telling everyone about the two-headed hound also meant telling them that Blake and I had gone out together last night. There was no way to say it without angering Danielle, and the last thing we needed right now was extra drama. I studied my food as I ate, my thoughts wandering. Even if Blake broke up with Danielle, the five of us were connected because of this prophecy. And as much as I wasn't a fan of Danielle's, starting something with Blake so soon after they broke up would be cruel.
I would hate it if someone did something like that to me.
So, are you all ready to get started?
Chris asked after we'd finished eating. My thoughts drifted back to the monstrous hound. The anger in its glowing eyes was unlike anything I'd ever seen, and the way its two heads came out of the same body wasn't natural. If we had to face anything similar today, we weren't ready to handle it. At least I wasn't.
You look worried, Kate said to me. Is everything all right?
Yeah, I forced a smile. I was just thinking about stuff.
She frowned. If you want to wait until another day when you're more ready for this.
No, I interrupted, placing my hands on the table. We have to do this today. Danielle laughed, downed the last drops of her coffee, and placed the mug on the table.
Is this another one of your feelings? She asked.
Blake glared at her, and then turned his attention to me. His eyes were full of apology, but he said nothing. His silence hurt more than anything he could have said. I zeroed in on Danielle, trying to remain calm and ignore her haughty expression. We agreed to start now, so that's what we're going to do, I said, glad when Kate and Chris nodded in agreement. Blake looked at his watch.
You said you wanted to do this when the sun was out, so now's the perfect time, he said. It's almost noon, when the sun will be at its highest place in the sky.
Renewed energy hummed through my body, and I wondered if it was because the sun was shining, or because I'd just had a full meal. Probably a little bit of both. Whatever it was, I was ready to hit the road and decipher that prophecy. Chapter 24. Kate wanted to drive, and Chris jumped in front, leaving Blake, Danielle, and I to figure out the seating arrangements in back. Danielle immediately volunteered for the middle. At first, I was disappointed that I wouldn't sit next to Blake, but it was for the best. I didn't want to deal with the awkwardness of my leg accidentally brushing his for the entire ride. I looked out the window so I wouldn't have to see Danielle and Blake in my peripheral vision, watching the scenery as we drove down Odessa Road. We passed the news station where my dad worked, and then the road split. Kate veered left to stay on Odessa, driving past the entrance to the Hemlock Center. It looked a lot less foreboding during the day. Across from the Hemlock Center was an old cemetery. The rows of graves appeared to go on for miles. As we got closer to the shore, the houses grew larger. Lots of them had boats parked outside. Finally, we hit the small parking lot that looked out towards the Ocean Cove. No other cars were there. Branches scattered along the beach made it look like no one had walked there since summer. Danielle crossed her legs, banging her foot against my shin.
This got us far, she said,
rolling her eyes and looking out my window.
So much for your theory of driving east. If we drive any further, we'll end up in the ocean.
I looked out the window again and placed my hand against it. The waves crashed steadily on top of each other, creating foams of white water that lapped up onto the shore. I don't know if the theory was wrong, I said. We might as well explore.
Why do you say that? Danielle asked.
I just have a feeling, I said. Come on. I took my seatbelt off, climbed out of the car, and walked to the edge of the parking lot. I didn't care if they followed or not. I wanted to check it out for myself. Shaped like a U, the beach wound its way around the cove. There were two docks sticking out into the water, both with boats tethered to the sides. The taste of salt water filled the air, and small hills lined the perimeter. The rocky beach was so unlike the smooth sand I remembered from vacations to the Georgia shore when I was younger. Another gust of wind blew through the air, and the waves crashed down harder on top of one another, like the ocean was urging me closer. The car door slammed behind me, and I turned around to find the others walking in my direction. Kate and Chris led the way, Blake and Danielle trudging behind them. The only one who looked happy was Chris.
Where do we go from here?
He asked, holding his hand above his eyes to block out the sun.
I can hotwire one of those boats if you need me to.
You can hotwire?
Blake snickered.
I'd love to see that.
We're not stealing any boats, so hotwiring won't be necessary, I said, even though the image of Chris trying to do that
was amusing. But I feel like we're in the right place. I just don't know what we're supposed to do now that we're here. I looked up at the sun, hoping an idea would come to me. Obviously, our Greek deity ancestors weren't going to float down from Olympus and talk to us, but didn't they have other divine ways of intervening?
That dock, Danielle said, pointing towards the one on the left.
Had she lost her mind? The dilapidated, crooked dock was clearly the older of the two. It looked like it might collapse into the water the second anyone walked on it. Only two boats with faded paint that probably hadn't been used for years were secured to the sides, as opposed to the clusters of modern, shinier boats bound to the newer dock on the right.
Maybe we should try the other one, Kate said. It looks safer.
No, Danielle shook her head. It's that one. She marched to the decaying dock, the stilettos of her knee-high boots sinking into the sand with every step she took. I followed her, my shoes spraying sand behind me as I hurried to catch up. The uneven, jagged dock appeared just as unsteady up close as it did from far away. It creaked every time a wave hit. But that didn't stop Danielle. She walked down the dock like a model strutting the runway. It's down there, she said, pointing at the water next to the dock.
What's down there? I asked.
Whatever we're here to get.
Kate wrapped her arms around herself and glanced back at the beach.
We should go back, she said. We can look at the prophecy again and see if we missed something.
Go back?
Chris's eyes widened.
Let's at least see what Danielle means. We've gone on instincts until now, and so far we've been right. Who's to say that she doesn't know what she's talking about?
Exactly, Danielle said. I'm checking this out. You guys can stay or go, but there's something there, and I'm going to find out what it is.
How do you know there's something there?
Blake asked softly, placing a hand on her elbow.
It's... Danielle paused, glancing at the water again and pressing her lips together.
Calling to me. She looked down at her nails, and I couldn't blame her for being embarrassed. It sounded crazy. My fingertips were turning numb from the cold, and I pulled the sleeves of my coat over my hands.
Do you have any idea what it is? I asked her.
Something important. She held her gaze with mine, not backing down.
Okay, I said. And how do you plan on getting it?
I'll jump. I did a double take of her outfit. Designer jeans, a blue silk shirt, a black winter coat with fur lining the hood, and, of course, the knee-high stiletto boots. It wasn't exactly the correct attire for jumping into the ocean in the winter.
You'll freeze to death.
Blake said what was surely on all of our minds.
And you're not dressed for swimming.
I'll be fine. She didn't even flinch at the fact that she would ruin what was probably more than $1,000 worth of clothing.
Water is sort of my thing.
I said nothing, because if any of us were going to jump into the ocean in the middle of January, it would be Danielle. Chris let out an uneasy laugh.
What are you going to do? Change the temperature of the ocean to turn into a giant hot tub? Because the ocean is kind of big.
Thanks, genius. Danielle rolled her eyes. I realized that.
Just trying to help.
He grinned and flipped his hair out of his eyes. You should try. I threw my opinion out there. If Danielle's instincts were correct, she could be helping us on the journey referred to in the prophecy. She could also become hypothermic and drown, but I suspected that wouldn't be the case.
I wasn't asking for your permission, even if you are in the center of all this, she said to me.
Her tone was cold as the weather, and everyone went quiet. The only sounds were the whooshing of the wind and the crashing waves.
I'm doing this. And don't any of you try to stop me.
She spun on her heel and dove off the dock, icy water splashing up at us as she disappeared beneath the surface.
Chapter 25. I stared at the place where Danielle had disappeared, waiting for her to resurface. But the water remained calm. There was no trace of her. She dove so deep that she was impossible to see.
I'm going in after her.
Blake widened his stance and studied the water, like he was building the courage to jump.
No,
You can't do that, I said, taking a step towards him. He stared at me shocked, and a little annoyed that I told him what to do. But I hated the thought of Blake getting hurt, so I continued. Danielle has power over the water. You don't. She'll be fine, but you'll freeze to death if you go in there. Chris stepped closer to the edge of the dock.
So we're supposed to do nothing? He asked. She could be drowning, and you want us to stand here and watch?
Yes, Kate nodded. She's the one who has power over the water, and she seemed confident that she could handle this. She's most likely fine, but if any of us go in there, the water will be